Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Sensei.
So tonight, we're going to have the grand finale of the Seven Factors of Awakening. And I thought I'd better do it on the first day of summer because everybody's going to be coming and going. I need to finish this up. So I put this together really quickly, so I'm going to refer to my papers a lot. So the last factor is equanimity. Equanimity is the last factor in all the lists. It's the last factor in the seven factors of awakening. It's the last one in the four immeasurable abodes. It's the last one in the seven perfections. And why is it the last one? Because it's the hardest. And we need all of the other factors, all of the other components to help us reach this goal of equanimity. And some people say equanimity is the goal in Buddhism. You know, nirvana itself. Upekkha is the word in Pali for equanimity, and it means to look over. In other words, to have a wide perspective. It can also be interpreted as equipoise, balance, or even-mindedness. And I really like even-mindedness because it expresses mindfulness without preference, without judgment, and without reactivity. Accepting what is as it is, clear seeing. So we cultivate and develop mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, and unification or samadhi, so that we can bring Buddha nature forward and live in the middle of our ever-changing lives with steadiness and balance. Now, equanimity is not indifference. Indifference has a sort of an attitude of not caring with a few hints of disdain. Equanimity is clear, it's clarity, it's calm. It's compassionate, it's kind. It's an open-mindedness that allows us to respond in an appropriate way, no matter what's happening. We're right there, clear on the mark. Seeing perspectives as perspectives and not over-identifying with views or perceptions or the contents of experience. So just as the seven factors of awakening help us balance the five hindrances, and I'm going to repeat them again. The hindrances, sensual craving, which is a biggie, ill will, dullness, restlessness, and doubt, which is also a biggie. Equanimity helps us to keep balanced and steady in the face of the four worldly winds. The four worldly winds are praise and blame, fame and disrepute, gain and loss, pleasure and pain. So you see where I'm going with this, right? It's either one extreme or the other. We're really happy or we're sad. So life is very uncertain, as we know, and it's unpredictable, and it's changing all the time. And so we can, if we allow ourselves, be tossed from one side to the other, you know, like you're on a boat, letting the waves pull you from one direction to another. And it affects every aspect of our lives. It affects us in our reputations, in our identities, our health, families, finances, how we see ourselves. You name it. Equanimity is the counterweight, bringing us back to center, back to our true nature. So the Course offers an image of an ancient tree with roots firmly established deep in the ground of the seven factors of awakening, which prevent it from being blown over by the winds. those worldly winds, the hindrances, the veiling factors. Yet it's not brittle, or it will break. So the tree dances with the wind. That's how I see it. You know, when it's a windy day and the trees are moving like this, they're dancing with the wind. They're not holding strong against the wind. They're moving with it. And the strength of the tree is the flexibility. And we learn from the tree that it's not the wind. It's not the ever-changing conditions in our lives that cause us suffering. It's our brittleness, you know, it's our desire to hold on to what we thought or to avoid what we don't want. You know? So that's where our suffering lives. We also take refuge in what is fleeting, like our identities, our reputations, our possessions, our youth, our looks, our intelligence. All those things are going to change. And when they change, we suffer if we hold on to them. This is who I was. Now I'm not. Who are I? Who are you? That's the ultimate question always. One source of suffering that's common to many of us is the comparing mind. The comparing mind. When we stack ourselves up against others so that we can, you know, secure our position. Sometimes we stack ourselves up against our former self. Oh, I'm not as good as I was before. We'll find any way to compare ourselves. How do we fit? Where do I fit in? So we're in a constant state of craving security, which separates us from everything else, because it's all I want, it's all I. Right? Through the cultivation of the awakening factors, we can start to undo the comparing mind by moving toward being comfortable with uncertainty. Pema Chodron talks about this all the time. Being comfortable with uncertainty. Why? Because life is not certain. There's nothing certain in life. It's completely unpredictable. It's completely insecure. So we can either look for things that aren't really going to be secure because nothing is secure. So it's like a fantasy to look for something like that. That's a complete utter delusion. Or say, well, okay, life is insecure. Maybe I should start to get comfortable with that. Maybe I should just be with it sometimes, even if it's in a little situation. You know, like you don't know what you're going to have for dinner later. You know, try to stay with the insecurity. And the thing that is interesting to me about this is that we think what we think is true. We think what we think about ourselves is true, and we think what we think about other people is true. But our thinking is just thoughts. They're just thoughts. That's all they are. Truth has nothing to do with it. We just think things up. So when you think of it that way, who can find the truth? Where's the truth? Because we're all going to think about the truth in a different way. You know? So letting go of these thoughts, we can find contentment and value and aliveness within ourselves. And it's equanimity that brings us back to our true nature, where there is no I and there is no other. It's just, oh, just empty anyhow. And when we ultimately, when we see that, we see how silly we are, that we spend so much time and effort and angst on comparing ourselves with other people. When in reality, we need the diversity of people in life. That's how we exist, through diversity. If everybody were the same, we wouldn't exist. I mean, if Tom weren't here doing technology, you think that, and everybody can only do technology, but who would be talking tonight? You know, everybody has something to offer. Another translation for equanimity is in the middle of. That's how we actually live our lives, in the middle of, But equanimity offers us the chance to live it more even-mindedly, more gracefully, more appropriately. Because it brings Buddha nature forward. It's that meditative consciousness of clear seeing that we bring off the cushion into the present moment over and over again. It's not a state as much as it is a maturity of understanding not only others, not only the situation, but how we respond internally to what's external. And it's the last line in which phrase engine, the Bodhisattva vow. May we extend this mind over all beings so that we and the world together may attain maturity in Buddha's wisdom. Maintaining equanimity is wisdom. And everybody's going crazy over something, and you can be calm in the midst of all of that. That is wisdom. Not letting yourself be tossed around. And how do we do that but through example? Extend this mind. We'll do it through example. We can't change anyone else. We only have the power to change ourselves. And there's an interesting quote in this section. And there's no mention of the author here. I'm assuming it's the Buddha, but I don't know. So here's the quote. No matter how much I love you or care for you, I simply do not hold in my hands the power to change the course of your mind. No matter how much someone might care for me, they don't hold the power in their hands to change the course of my mind. This is the important part. To deliver happiness. They don't have the power to deliver happiness or truly make me miserable. Not to blame other people. The power to change the course of our hearts and minds lies in our own hands. So if somebody's young and you're in the supermarket, you have a choice. No? You have a choice on how you respond to that. You can just be calm about it and just say, okay, I guess that person's having a hard day. You know, or you can get angry. How dare that person talk to me about it? So it's really, really important to know this, how things outside of ourselves touch us. You know, usually they touch us someplace that's where we feel very vulnerable or scared or fearful about. That's not them. They're just being who they are, you know. Equanimity is also described as cooling the fires of greed, hatred, and ignorance, and the impulses of craving, aversion, and confusion. These impulses cause us to view our lives in terms of what we do and what happens to us. It's called event making. Now, I never heard of this until I did this course, but it makes a lot of sense, event making. This event making keeps the story of me going. We describe ourselves through the events of our lives. Well, I did this and I did that, and this is what happened to me, and this is what I said, whether it's good or bad. I liked it, I didn't like it, I didn't want it, I wanted it. So we chop up life into all these little events that we think are us. And what we don't see is the background. The place all of these events are occurring in or floating around in, which is life itself. So we're missing life itself as we get caught up in all of these events. And we get all stirred up in all our personalities. And we go into the hindrances, and now we can't get out because we're too involved in it all. And so we need to take a breath and look at where this is all happening. It's happening in Buddha nature. It's happening in life. All of it is Buddha nature anyway. But it's where do you want to live in Buddha nature? In the craziness or in the calm, tranquility, clarity, collectiveness, being really here in the moment. So equanimity is about cooling event making, which of course is based on the five hindrances, which cause dualism and separation. Now, if we don't get involved with event making, some of us may think that we'll be completely boring, you know. But one of the teachers in this course, her name is Christina Feldman, says that she thinks the deepest element of mindfulness is the quality of eventlessness. And that's true. When we sit in meditation, what is it that we do? We let go of everything. We let go of the events, the thoughts about them, the feelings, the emotions about them. We let it all go. And then we have a direct experience with our lives, with who we are. We get down to what's real and true. She says it allows this unfolding fluidity, this unfolding process of living, which is not simply marked by what I like and don't like or what something means to me. And by the way, on the back of my Roxu, it says, let it unfold. Why is it there? Because I am an event maker. I am an event maker in that I schedule everything. I'm a scheduler. There's not a schedule I don't get connected to or attached to is the word I really want. Although I hope I'm getting better with that, but I don't know if I am, to be honest. So, but this is deadly. This is absolutely deadly to be such an event maker where your life is like this, chopping it up. It sucks the life out of it. That's what it does. It sucks the life out of it. And it makes us dull. We don't feel our actual life. We don't experience the spaciousness, the calm, and the beauty of just being alive. Isn't that something, Tom? Just being alive. Although I did discover the trick. The trick is, even if you have a lot of things to do, because we all do, you know, in the society that we live in, the trick is to become one with each and every activity, one by one. Like you're being with writing a talk and not thinking about you have to make dinner now. I'm just writing right now. I'm just being that. I'm just being the writing. Okay? Now I'm being the cooking of the dinner. Now I'm washing the dishes. I'm just being washing the dishes without all. So I have to do this and I have to do that. All the thoughts that we but add pressure to an already packed schedule. Just becoming the activities takes a lot of that angst away. But anyway, I digress. So another suggestion is to not contribute to agitation and offer equanimity to others. And it's true, you know, agitation is very contagious. So bringing a cool head, a warm heart, and stillness to a situation can help other people invaluably. I've tried this myself. Oftentimes, they follow your lead. Here's a quote from the Buddha, one of the Udana Sutras, and it's entitled "In Praise of Equanimity." Now, they use the word move, motion. They use the word motion in this quote, and motion in this quote refers to the compulsion toward and away, grasping and avoiding, and getting involved with the agitation of the very thought. That's what motion means. You see, I'm always in motion. So here's the quote. For one who clings, motion exists. But for one who does not cling, there is no motion. Where there is no motion, there is stillness. Where stillness is, there is no craving. And this verily is the end of suffering. Another good suggestion is to notice when equanimity is absent, to know the felt sense of being overwhelmed, of being lost, of being knocked off balance, of being really reactive. If we can explore this state with curiosity, we can identify what's missing. And what's missing is calm, collectedness, clarity, compassion, kindness, ultimately wisdom. Then we can see in that very spot is the birthplace of equanimity, right in the middle of life, as we say, right in the middle of things. We say, oh, wait. And we do this moment after moment for a whole entire lifetime. So I'd like to conclude with a suggestion from Christina Feldman. In times of difficulty, she reminds herself of the phrase in the middle of or in the midst of and asks, what's needed? What's healing? What's helpful? What's liberating? So in the midst of this, patience. In the midst of this, generosity. In the midst of this, kindness. In the midst of this, caring. I think we can all do it. So this concludes our study of the 7 factors of awakening. I hope that they have helped you in your lives. Bringing them to maturity leads us to an awakened mind, a Buddha mind, which offers us the insights and freedoms that the Buddha discovered himself in following the Buddha path. All the factors are or will be online. And if you wish to take the course, which is not a bad idea, you can go to Tricycle and look for online courses. It's not that expensive. And you could just take the course. And if taking the course is, I mean, it's all pre-recorded and everything. You could do it at your leisure if you wanted to. So I thank you very much for listening. Does anybody have any comments or questions about anything that I've said this evening? Anybody online? Oh, I see them. Yeah, Beth.
Amen, sister.
She said, amen, sister.
I don't know if it's amen.
Yes, do it's funny. Everything you spoke about, I've been looking at how often the sense of me gets reinforced over and over and over. And you hit the nail on the head with the event making. That's it. This is how all happening to me, and I talk about it, and how I need to get into it, and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And
chopping
it up. Just looking at like how do I keep reinforcing over and over and over and over, having moments of clarity, and then reinforcing this separate sense of me.
Well, you've been living this way your whole life, so it's not going to be an easy thing to do. And you're going to work with it your whole entire life until you're in the grave, because it's so ingrained in us to think that we're separate from each other. But the thing is, the ability to notice it, that's where meditation comes in, is so important. Meditation, people think that meditation is just a technique to get you to live a better life. Everything in meditation is your whole life. Everything from the posture, the way we sit is steady and balanced. We don't sit back on our chairs. Why? Because we want to be self-reliant. Everything in the posture is the way we want to live. And so when we're in meditation and we get some clarity of mind and we notice And we bring that clarity of mind. The more we sit, the more we bring the clarity of mind into our lives. And then we notice. And then we make decisions about how we want to live. And we screw up most of the time. We pick the wrong thing almost all the time. I want to win this time. I don't want my husband to win. I want to win this time, right? Even if you've done it before, like, okay, I'm going, all right, okay, got it. This is how it's going to be. And okay, I'm cool with it. The next time, it might not be the same. So we just keep noticing and noticing and noticing and learning about ourselves. And if we notice it enough and we trust in Buddha nature, it starts to happen on its own without our intervention, where we have to now be better, we have to be perfect, because we can make that another game, another event. Oh, I'm great at meditating, right? So, you know, our mind is very, very tricky. That's why we always go back to the body. Thank you, everybody.